I know many of you spend a lot of time at the ballparks, especially this time of the year, and I've found that you'll hear a lot of and see a lot of crazy things at the ballpark. A couple of weeks ago, I was coaching a 7-year-old baseball game out at Palmer Park, and we were playing the best team in the league, and I think they're still undefeated at this time. I was coaching on the first base side, right next to the opponent's dugout, and we were already down by like 9 or 10 runs. But we were batting, and we had a batter who hit the ball into the outfield, and it looked like he was going to get a home run. But as he was getting closer to second base, I could see their second baseman and their shortstop both were standing right on top of the bag. And so I shouted out to no one in particular, but maybe if the ump heard, that might be a good thing. They're interfering with him. He should be awarded an extra base. But it didn't matter. It turns out he scored anyway. He got a home run. And you know how it is at the ballpark. It's chaos. Everybody went crazy. But also, at times at the ballpark, it could go from chaos to, like, silent, just like that. And that's what happened at this point in time. And all of a sudden, during the silence, before our next batter came up, I hear this voice in the other dugout. "Hey, mister, how many runs you got?" And so I had nothing I could say to the little guy because he had scoreboard on me. But what he didn't know is that at that time, I was still struggling for a topic for my talk tonight. So I came up with, "Hey, mister, how many talents you got?" But I decided I didn't want to see that on the website. And I went through several iterations and finally came up with maximizing our talents for God. I appreciate Brock reading all those verses for the parable of the talents for us. And I'm sure many of you have heard this many times and probably even heard a handful of sermons on it as well. So I'm just going to briefly go through and explain the parable and summarize it right quick. So the man going into another country represents Christ, who's our Lord. The other country represents heaven. That's where Christ is. And the servants, that's Christ's disciples. That's us. And the distributions of talent represents an endowment of gifts. And we heard from that parable that he read that that's based on the abilities that these people had. So the man went into the other country, he gave the talents, the 1, 2, and 5, to his servants, and he left. And they went out, and the 2 and 5 talent did well. They doubled what they had been given. But the 1 talent servant, he didn't do anything. He buried it. So when the man returned, and the men had to give account for what they had done, he commended the 2 talent and the 5 talent servant and rewarded them. But the 1 talent man was condemned and cast into the outer darkness. So I want to take a minute just to give a couple, 3 really simple applications. I know there's many other great applications of the parable, but these are the ones I want to talk about tonight. And the first one is, we are all different in our abilities, but that everything that we have, every gift that we have, every talent we have comes from God. And in this parable, we talk about just a 1 talent, 2 talent, and 5 talent servant. But we read about this concept in many other places in the New Testament. And Paul wrote in Romans 12, verses 4 through 8, "For as we have many members in one body, but all members do not have the same function, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. Our ministry, let us use it in our ministry. He who teaches, in teaching. He who exhorts, in exhortation. He who gives, with liberality. He who leads, with diligence. And he who shows mercy, with cheerfulness." Likewise, in 1 Corinthians, Paul wrote, this time to the church at Corinth, and in these verses, which I'm not going to read, he describes the church again as a body. This time when he talks about the members, he's talking about physical things like eyes, hands, ears, and feet, and how they all serve a specific purpose. But if you have the eyes without the ears, then you wouldn't have the hearing. The body wouldn't be complete. So he says that these serve a specific purpose, working together so that the body can be effective. So I think each of us, we may be blessed with totally different talents, but those talents are from God, and they serve an important purpose in the work that he's asked us to do. The second application of the parable is burying our talent is condemned. Note that the servant, the 1 talent servant, didn't do anything inherently evil with the talent that he'd been given. He didn't use it for dishonest gain. He just didn't do anything with it. And to me, that represents the do-nothing Christian. That would be somebody who had been baptized and forgiven of their sins, and they're like, okay, thanks, I'm good. And then even showing up to church service is not, because that requires some effort, is not even important to them. And I'm hoping that that's the small minority in people in the church today. But I think we can apply this concept of bearing a talent to Christians that are putting forth some effort and using some of their talents while choosing to leave other talents hidden. The reasons that they can do it range from laziness, they just don't want to do anything, to distractions. Maybe their job has just overtaken them and that's all they think about. Or even worldliness, the pleasures of this world are taking them away from the work that they need to be doing. Or maybe just a preconceived notion that I have a talent and somebody else has that same talent, but they're doing it better than me. Or we already have a whole lot of people doing that talent, so my participation isn't necessary. In James 4:17, it says, to him who knows to do good and who doesn't do it, to him it's a sin. And I think this parable teaches us that if you are not using your talents, that they will be taken away from us. And the last application I want to make of this parable is, it's another simple one. We are going to be held accountable for the works that we have done. First of all, I think we can, even though these servants may not have been a group together, we can think about the fact that they weren't looked at as a group. They started off with 8 talents, the whole group of them. They turned them into 15. But the one person who didn't do anything wasn't successful just because the others were, nor were they condemned because he didn't do anything. The second thing is, excuses are no good when it comes to the day of judgment. He said, I knew you were a hard man, that you had reaped where you hadn't sown, that you gathered where you didn't scatter seed, and I was afraid. So, but none of those helped him. And none of the excuses that I used in the previous point are going to help us either in the judgment day if we don't use the talents that we have. And finally, on a more positive note, you might note that the reward was not based on the talents that they had, the 1, 2, or 5, or the amount that they earned. Each one of them doubled it. But they were given the same reward based on them doing the best with what they had been given to them. We read in 2 Corinthians 5 and 10, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one of us may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. Now I want to move on and take a step back and say, well, how do we recognize what talents we have? And I can't believe that I've been working in the United States government for over 25 years. Maybe even harder to believe is the fact that thinking about the millions and millions of dollars that they have invested on management training, leadership offsites, and seminars to try to improve the individuals in the government. To help them identify the special skills and talents given to them by God, and for the managers to learn how to use these talents for the betterment of the organization. I've taken classes on total quality management, leadership in action, Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective Workers. They've asked me to take IQ tests, brain type tests, personality tests. And the fact is many of you, especially the younger people, are going to go through the same types of skills analysis throughout your academic career, and then when you enter the workforce. I guess the question I'd say here is, how can we use these type of activities for our spiritual work? And on the surface, one would think, so there's only so much good that you can do from these kinds of things, but I do think that you can learn some strengths and weaknesses from having these kinds of classes and trainings. But as far as your core strengths, those things are going to be self-evident. These are things that you're going to know from the beginning. And in preparing for this lesson, I came across a really simple exercise that we can all do. Maybe you can do it tonight or sometime this next week. Basically, just take a pencil and a piece of paper. Write 1 through 10. And on the left-hand side of the paper, just write down anything that you consider to be your strength. It's mostly things that you're really good at or things that you have that you get a lot of energy out of. Just making sure it was okay. And then, after you've done that, I want you to try to associate each one of those talents with the work that we can do in our service to God. And I did this exercise myself yesterday, and I only came up with 6 things for myself. But what I noticed is that 2 of the 6 things that I listed as strengths for myself that I haven't been doing them very well. And one of them is because I'm taking part in another part of the church service is keeping me from doing it as often as I wanted to. But the other one is something that I have done really well, and I just haven't been doing it as much lately. And it's something that I was glad I did this exercise because I know I need to pick it up. But if we just solely focus on our core strengths, sometimes our underdeveloped talents that might first appear to us as weaknesses, we'll disregard those. But we need to remember that some talents are going to emerge as we start to use our gifts. As in the parable of the talents, the two-talent servant and the five-talent servant, as they used them, they gained more talents. And one way to try to develop a weakness into a strength is just good old-fashioned trial and error. And this church, I think, does an excellent job of providing those kinds of opportunities for our young men and young women in this congregation. And in these venues, like the Salt Shakers and the young men's service that they prepare for and many other training classes we have for them, this provides an outlet where they can try and try and try again at things that they might not think they're good at in the beginning, but they're doing it in a smaller, less intimidating setting. And even though previously I just said that the accountability is going to be on an individual basis, I think we need to remember that parents, Bible class teachers, group leaders, elders, we do bear some responsibility in helping our young people to grow, and I hope that we continue to do these activities and maybe even expand them. When you're writing out that little list of things where your strong suits are and you're trying to find a work associated with the church that you can do, I hope you weren't just thinking of things that happen in the 4.5 hours a week that we're here. Because there's going to be much more time that we spend away from church than we do here. And having taken part in it, I know that when you're doing something in the church service, you spend a great deal of time outside of the church actually preparing for that. But I'm talking more like non-duty roster type activities. And this last week, we had our first group meeting with the new work groups. And we talked about all of the traditional work group activities that we normally do and assigned some of those to other people in the group. But we also went through a brainstorming activity where we could enhance those traditional acts that we've been doing with some other works for our church and our community. And I'm really excited about the opportunity for us to grow this work in the work groups. Well, the last thing I want to talk about is all those things, when we do all these things, if we're just doing them because we're checking a box, that's the wrong motivation. And last week, we had a really good lesson from Greg that talked about the church at Ephesus. And I know it was the albatross decoys was how I remembered it. But remember the church at Ephesus? That was the church who had forgotten or left their first love. And they had started doing their acts based on other things, self or others, to impress others. And I think we should always remember what our first love is. Now, before I go, I'm not going to waste all the government's money. I'm going to pull out one thing that I learned from those seminars. And it's the most simple thing that I can remember from them. Stephen Covey has a slogan that he talks about, the main thing. And it's useful in almost any organization you have, because whatever your main function is of your organization, he says the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. And I like that, because for me, from time to time, when I start thinking about self, then I need to think the main thing is pleasing God. And if I keep that the main thing, then I'll be successful. And finally, when we have recognized our talents, we have the proper motivation, when there's a need that arises that we can do, we do it without even thinking about it. It's instinctive. And it's not because it's something everybody expects that we'll do, or because we think somebody will say good job when you do it, or even out of fear from going to the outer darkness or to hell. But we do that because it's a gift that God has given us to carry out for Him while we're here on this earth serving Him. And when our entire church is functioning this way, we are one body, and it's something that our community and the world around us will want to be a part of.